you have a unique vantage point in a business as a customer success leader. You get to know the customers probably better than anybody else in the entire business. You have an opportunity to really impact the financials through renewals and through expansion. You also, as your company matures, have an opportunity to, again, like get really close to even fundraising and the metrics that investors care about.
Welcome to the Lean Playbook, your weekly dose of strategies and insights from revenue-driving leaders, powered by Lean AI. Join us each week as we sit down with industry experts to uncover the secrets behind their consistent results and explore the best practices that propel tech companies forward. So buckle up and get ready to accelerate your growth with the Lean Playbook.
Hi, I'm Kabir Mathur, the CEO of Lean AI, and you've tuned in to the second episode of the Lean Playbook, where we glean insights from revenue-driving leaders from around the world of tech. Joining me on the show today is John Gleason, Managing Partner of SuccessVP, a pre-seed and seed stage focused fund that invests in and supports founders with their post-sales journey. John is an accomplished leader within the post-sales world. He served as the Vice President of Customer Success at Motive Inc., where he spent over 5 years and led his team through incredible hypergrowth, going from less than $1 million in ARR to over $300 million. His team of 150 served over 130,000 customers and created nearly $3 billion in enterprise value. Prior to Motive, John was the first hire at Affinio, where he built the company's first sales function before leading customer success. In this episode, we delve into various topics, including John's learnings from hyperscaling CS teams, strategies for attracting and effectively managing exceptional talent, methods for evaluating the impact of customer success within tech companies, and the latest advancements he's seeing as a fund manager in the world of post-sales.
Welcome to the second episode of the Lean Playbook podcast. We have John Gleason with us today. Welcome to the show, John.
Yeah, Kabir, it's wonderful to be here. I really appreciate you having me on. I'm honored to be number two as well.
Yeah, we're super excited to have you. You have a great background in CS. You've been a VP of CS twice. You're now investing in companies and offering them a lot of guidance on the CS front. So I'm sure our listeners will get a lot of value out of all of the nuggets of wisdom you have to share with us today.
Cool. Well, let's do it. Here we go.
Awesome. So the first question I have, we like to start with this question is, what does customer success mean to you? How do you define it?
Oh, geez, that is a very open-ended, highly debated question. I guess like for me, I'll like start at the very end of like with the lagging output. For me, it was, you know, it's always that net revenue retention number, right? When I think about like my time at Motive, you know, the thing that I owned was keeping all of our customers and also growing the relationship, expanding them. And yeah, the output of that was net revenue retention. I think sometimes like people talk about the definition of customer success as to like the how to get to that end point. And so there's a lot, but you know, the quick summary of it is if people who believed in you at the beginning continue to believe in you at the end, whenever their renewal comes up and they're finding what you do for them to be helpful, and hopefully more helpful than it was when they signed up, you've done a good job. And so it's really like getting, you know, getting a customer from starting point to ending point, and then measuring it, you know, through their willingness to do more work, do more business with you.
That makes a lot of sense. I like that angle. You've taken a very data-driven angle to answering the question, but it makes a lot of sense. That's how the success of these teams is measured at most companies. So that should be the end point that you're working towards.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, like in this environment in particular, it's very important to measure what you do in customer success with things that actually like move the ball forward for the entire company. And so, you know, when I think of like net revenue retention, it's probably one of the more important metrics in valuing a SaaS company. And And so, you know, you want to measure it with a metric that's super darn important to your company. So you have to be data oriented and tied to something highly commercial and very important to the business.
Absolutely. Cool. The reason we like to ask that question is because customer success as a function is pretty nascent, right? Compared to sales and marketing and some of these things that have been formalized over time. So there's one side of it, which is formalizing the playbooks and the organizational side of it, of things. But the other is personally, as people are getting into the space and trying to understand career progression and so on, as someone that's climbed up all the way to the top of the ladder, been a VP of CS, curious what your thoughts are on what it takes to go from a head of CS, which is a more common position these days, to a VP of CS. Since you've gone through this experience, what would you share with some of our listeners that are thinking about it?
Wow. There's so much to that. And it's like contextually, it's going to be different in every type of organization. I would say, like, first and foremost, so like, and this isn't even like tied to customer success in general. This is more just like tied to this thing that we do as operators in venture-backed companies. So if you think about like where customer success is most common, it's in venture-backed SaaS businesses, right? And as an operator working for those types of companies, you can be, you know, the greatest, you can be the smartest person in the room, you can be the most qualified. But at the end of the day, if you're not working inside of a company that's growing rapidly, and you're not part of, you know, part of a team that's exceptional, you're only going to get so far. And so the thing that I always tell, like, you know, operators or people just like getting into their career is like, learn what you can about venture, learn what, you know, the venture capitalists, the people who invest in these companies are looking for, learn what they think about founders and markets and opportunities and the metrics that they measure, the pace of growth and things like that. And when you sign up for a company, make sure that, you know, if it's a startup that is on that venture road, that it's a boat with a rising tide, right? You're only going to go so far on a sinking ship. So pick a great company, pick great founders, pick great teams first. And that's going to be like the number one key to just like your own career success. You want to work with great people. And so assuming that you land yourself and you're lucky enough to land yourself in one of these companies, you know, how do you progress along that path? Well, I think actually, you know, the benefit that we have in customer success is that we actually get to find ourselves in a lot of different parts in the business. You know, I think about like when I was at Motive leading customer success there, and I, you know, unpack my calendar, where was I spending time? It was spending time with our chief product officer. It was spending time with our CRO. It was spending time with co-founders. Those really important places. And you have a unique vantage point in a business as a customer success leader. You get to know the customers probably better than anybody else in the entire business. You have an opportunity to really impact the financials through renewals and through expansion. You also, as your company matures, have an opportunity to, again, like get really close to even fundraising and the metrics that investors care about. So you have this like really cool perspective. And I would say, like, don't take that lightly, and make sure that you're offering customer insights. You're not afraid to talk commercials. You're not afraid to own a number. And if you're valuable to the folks in product and you're valuable to the folks in revenue, and things are going well in the company, and you're working with everybody else, you know, you're going to naturally progress. And I think, you know, when you look across like all of the functions in a SaaS company, the role where maybe a young, ambitious, smart person who's willing to do outside of work homework, so learn the things that they need to know before they arise. All of the functions, CS is probably the one where you can like actually scale with the company as it grows. It's very hard to do maybe as a sales leader. A lot of sales leaders, you know a certain stage of growth, or even as a product leader, it's really hard to move through a couple different segments of scale. But when you look across like the CS landscape, you know, CS is still relatively new. It's only now that that first vintage of companies, you know, in that like the post-cloud world are maturing. And as a result, like the, you know, there's not a ton of people in CS who have seen, you know, all of the stages of growth. They've had to collect them at different companies. So if you're somebody who has like the willingness and the appetite to grow, you can in fact actually scale through a couple of stages of growth, and you probably have a better shot at that compared to a lot of other functions in a business. So I would say, yeah, like just to summarize, like my keys to success: really close to your customers, get really close to their needs, and by proxy, get really close to the folks who are building the product, and get really close to the people selling the product. And if those are your best allies, and your company's doing well, you're going to advance your career pretty quickly. But you got to pick a good company to begin with.
That's a great takeaway, and I feel like that. It's that actually scales across different stages of CS as well, right? As an IC, the exceptional CSMs that you and I have probably worked with are the ones where the obvious thing is to work really closely with your customers, understand them really well. What they might not do as well is build the relationships internally with the product team, with the sales team, with marketing, to really build that cross-functional understanding and push the customer's agenda through your organization. So really what you're saying is scale that up as you get more senior, talk to the CRO, talk to the CPO, talk to the founders, and really push that agenda as much as you can.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like 100%. I always say like to a CSM or a CS leader, actually I say this all the time. I say everything I learn about managing people or operating inside of a company, or even like raising this venture fund that I'm doing right now, I learned by being a CSM, right? If you think about it, at CSM, you have a book of business, right? You only have so much time. You have to figure out the most impactful way to message and communicate and update and advance the agendas of, you know, all of your customers. That's your goal as a CSM. You're trying to get them to that end state where they renew and expand. And so you have to prioritize your time, and you have to think carefully about, you know, what everybody wants to get out of this relationship. And I think like if you shine that flashlight back inside the organization, the same is true, right? You want to advance, you know, the world for your customers. And so you have to unpack your organization internally. You have to say, okay, what is it that the CEO cares about? What is the vision? Where are we trying to go? Okay, how do I align, you know, the value that I can give this individual? How do I help them? Same thing, your CRO. How do you advance their agenda through what you know in customer success? Same thing with product. And so like, think of those internal stakeholders as your customers, and know that they're all trying to get to a desired outcome. And how do you be a catalyst in getting them there, not a friction point? And so make sure that you go about and every single day work towards doing that. They each have a reason that you know, they need you to exist. And so make sure that you're helping them along.
Makes a lot of sense. And the other aspect of this that you mentioned was picking a great company. Speaking of which, I noticed that you recently tweeted about Motive's growth while you were there from 1 million to 60 million and beyond in 6 months, which of course is amazing. Tell us a little bit about how you scaled your customer success team in an organization that was going through hyper growth. That's the type of scenario that a lot of people dream about. They might experience it to a smaller extent, but how do you scale up a team when things are moving so fast across the company?
Yeah. So at Motive, I led through Motive, just, you know, for the background, from 1 million in ARR, through to 300 million and beyond. In process, we created a $3 billion company. At one point in that journey, we went from $1 million in ARR to 60 million in ARR in the span of 6 months. Basically, what did this look like? How is that even possible, right? And I think this is probably advice for like the startup founders out there is, you know, you have to have a fantastic product, but you also, you know, timing is everything, right? And there was, you know, market catalyst where every truck in America needed to be able to track their hours of service. And so we kind of caught this fast pitch, you know, right in the pocket. And we were able to turn a lot of free users that we had spent all the years before delighting and providing value to into paid users over a very short period of time. So that's how it went from a million to 60 million. And so how did we tackle that? Well, I think like the future comes at you rather quickly. And it's really hard when you're going through hyper growth to do the things that you need to do in the moment while also taking care of the things that are just around the corner. And, you know, when you ask, you know, CS leaders, you know, what is, you know, what's the Achilles heel of their teams? They'll always say, oh man, they're so reactive. It's too reactive. You know, we're not as proactive as we'd like to be. And so in scaling through hyper growth, that was like in the back of my head. You know, when you're onboarding literally like thousands of customers a week, the only thing that you have time to be is reactive. And that's very important. That's the most important thing you can do right now. If you don't onboard customers well, they're probably going to churn. They're probably not going to be customers for very much longer. And so kind of one of the keys to just how we scaled was specialization. We broke the CS team into two roles. We had folks who were focused on onboarding, and we had folks who could take a little bit longer time horizon. These were what became actually our first customer success managers, and they were the ones who were tracking that customer towards renewal. So that split in the team just allowed us to actually have coverage, and we were okay that some people were going to be reactive and in the moment, those are the onboarders, but we also needed to create capacity so people could be more proactive. I think as part of that as well, probably the thing that I came to learn is the bigger your company gets, the more customers you have, the less any one person is going to be able to do everything, right? At Motive, you know, I was responsible for, let's say, the customer health of 130,000 unique customers, all with, you know, people with heartbeats on the other side, right? It's a very complex problem to solve and make them all successful and happy. And no one person can do it. And so the thing that I came to realize was like in hyper growth, in, you know, big companies, you have to get very, very good at the handoffs. You have to get very good at team working. And the thing that you actually have to like perfect is not only your motions, but also the connectivity between those motions. And so you have to get very good at what your handoffs are, when to tag people in, what your roles and responsibilities diagrams look like, and making sure that everybody's on the same page there. So, you know, that's the key to it. And that becomes like a never ending thing that you have to design and redesign as you move into new markets, as you launch new features, as certain parts of your product require less support. You know, you always need to support those new parts of your roadmap with more people. As things mature, you can take people away. And so there's a heavy people component there. And with people comes personalities, and with personalities becomes friction. And so make sure that you manage those handoffs to eliminate as much friction as possible. So I can't say like we did it perfectly, but on the other side, like, you know, we did have net revenue retention north of 130% for extended periods of time. So we must have done something right.
Absolutely. Yeah, the numbers speak for themselves. And I like that strategy. That makes a lot of sense, where I think a lot of CS leaders talk about trying to move their organizations to be purely proactive, but I'm not sure that's practically possible, right? I think it's more about understanding the customer's needs, what is always going to be kind of a reactive scenario. Onboarding and implementation are great examples of that, where you're just trying to support the customer through a journey that they're going through. And then the renewals part can be either split up within a specific team across different people, or if it's an individual, maybe you do some type of time allocation and tell them, spend this much time on reactive things, but make sure to keep an eye on the proactive activities as well.
Totally. And like you said, Kabir, like it never ends. You know, like even when I look around, I work with a lot of startups right now. There's a lot of companies that maybe make it to $20 million in an ARR. And now it's time to launch product number two, or with the extension of their first product is. So now there's like this reintroduction of product market fit, figuring out the pain points there. Maybe it's putting something to market slightly before it's ready. Like we all do that. You all have to do that because of just the pace of innovation. And so as a result, like you're never going to have this perfect product with no bugs that, hit, you know, all of the customers' pain points perfectly, and solves them all, where you don't need, people moving that along. Not to say like those people are always customer success people. They can be support people. They can be salespeople. They can be product people. But you always have to, be aware that finding product market fit never ends. And you want to make sure that you're facilitating your customers. And if that involves people, that's the way that you got to do it. They say like do things that don't scale. And the fact of the matter is whatever scale you're at, there's always more scaling to do. And so you're always going to be going back to, start with people, figure it out, perfect it, and then move on to the next.
Yep, absolutely. So we talked about one of the somewhat universal problems that CS leaders think about. Another one is around measuring and articulating the impact of their CS teams, right? It's not as cut and dry as a sales organization where you have a quota, you hit the quota, that's good. If you don't hit the quota, it's bad. Because it's also not like launching products where you can A/B test whether the impact of assigning a CSM to an account with 50% of your accounts versus you don't give them support of the other 50%. The stakes are too high with your enterprise accounts typically. So how do you measure, even if it's net revenue retention, how do you actually measure the impact of what the human in the loop is able to do and influence a customer towards those expansion goals? So how did you think about that at this scale at Motive?
Yeah, like there's a lot that goes into that as well. And so like I mentioned, like the lagging indicator being net revenue retention. So what are the building blocks of net revenue retention? The building blocks of the NRR expansion and gross revenue retention, right? Renewals. And so if you go one layer below your GRR number, you have your logo renewal and you have the ARR that you're renewing on each account. And so let's just like isolate for that piece right there. How do you measure your impact? Okay, so let's say you own $100 million worth of recurring revenue. Your impact is all that recurring revenue still there? And so I always approached in some ways my lagging indicators a little bit like a sales team of sorts. It's, you know, it's easy in a sales organization, or I wouldn't say easy, but if you watch high performing sales teams, they always know the status of their pipeline, right? They know things that are moving from qualification to close one and beyond. And so I think like you need to think about renewals in that same way and be like dialed into your forecast and operate like that. Because again, if you can call the number and you know the intricacies of that number and how you get there, you show that you're very close to influencing it. So I always ran like renewals as if it was a sales cycle, was able to forecast my renewal forecast like with precision as best possible, and always getting better at you know, being, you know, a couple points north or south of calling that number perfectly. So I think that's very, very important. The other piece is on the expansion side, right? I don't think you ever want to be afraid to, even if you're not closing the expansion opportunities, even if that's getting passed to a sales organization or more of an account management function, you want to make sure that you're tied or you can highlight your influence around it. And so one thing that wasn't common, you know, 10 years ago when I got into customer success, but is common now, is this term of CSQL, customer success qualified lead. That was also like a key to success, is like we could always start to forecast what expansion would look like because we built really good tracking, reporting, and process around driving CSQLs. And so like those two building blocks add to like lead directly into the bottom line of the company, the expansion and the renewal piece. And then within that, that's where things get a little bit squishier, right? But again, I think you need to be like just great in your tracking. You want to make sure, you know, when was the last time we touched every account? What communication? How did we connect with them? What is our penetration of EBRs on our major accounts? What is the cadence of that? How often? And so track those averages, you know, how much time did you spend with each customer? When was the last executive business review? Was that a positive interaction? And so it's a building blocks of the activities that go into those lagging indicators, the renewal and the expansion. So track those activities, right? Because then you start to actually understand like the shapes of your funnel. And you start to understand how you control those outcomes through your activities. And so if you start to have all of those things locked in, your activities, how you're influencing your path to that lagging indicator, I don't think there ever becomes a question around how do you impact or how do you drive things forward or why is CS even important in the first place. So it all becomes tracking. It all ties back to things that you did and trying to marry them to some sort of output that matters in the business. So that's how I did it. There's lots of ways to do it. It's probably like looks and feels more like a sales playbook. But at the end of the day, like, you know, we exist to create companies that have revenue. So I think be tied to that if you can.
That's really sound advice. Take a page out of your sales counterpart's book. I think a lot of CS leaders maybe get caught up in the squishy metrics and don't do pipeline development and tracking as well as their sales counterparts do. So that I think that makes a lot of sense at a growing company.
Okay. Yeah. A little asterisk next to that too. I think like the how or what the interactions look like, that can be different, right? You know, you there's a lot more understanding that goes into a CS function than let's say, well, sales, great sellers and great CS people actually tend to be a lot of like, I have a friend, Jill Rowley, who kind of pioneered like social selling. And she always said like the future of sales is customer success. And I don't know if sales will ever be called customer success, but if you look at like the great enterprise sellers, like they're very consultative. They really take the time to understand the pain points of their customer. And they find a way to solve that with what they're selling. And I think that's a core attribute of a great CSM too. And if you like even like backtrack or like, you know, take a higher level view, like that ought to be like a great view that product people make too. You might, you know, be in a company that's building more of like a product led motion, and you still need to, you know, deeply understand what your customers' needs are and deeply build to solve those or facilitate those through your product. And to me, like that all fits under the umbrella of customer success.
Yeah, I love that. That makes a lot of sense. Hopefully, in the future, customer success has an even broader umbrella and goes into consultative selling and all of that as well. So staying on the topic of processes, This may have been a blessing and a curse for you, you tell me, but working in an organization that was growing so quickly and was actually operating at such large scale as well, you had a pretty large team under you. You probably got to learn a lot of lessons quickly, things that worked, things that didn't work. So what are some processes or rituals that worked really well for your team that you would recommend to other CS leaders?
Oh, that's a great question. I think as a, like, and this would be like contextual to just like CS leaders, but you know, when you're growing really quickly, again, like, you know, what we said about CSMs, you know, how do you, you know, understand, you know, what the pain points of everybody are and how do you solve them? And that's your job as a CS leader. And so when you're growing really quickly, you're quickly going to hit the outer bounds of what you can personally do. And so your responsibility really becomes to create great leaders inside of your organization and highly capable people inside of your own organization, and to develop leadership from within. And so I would say, like, I don't know if it's a process, but I always spent a lot of time like focusing on, you know, at first my managers, and then it came to be my directors, and making sure that they were feeling heard and advanced in their careers. And I knew that if I had like a really good team that I could work with and they could work with me and they believed in me, that it could let me slide off of certain things to focus on different things. So I would say, like, you know, if you find yourself lucky enough to be in a situation where there's super high growth, spend extra time to develop great people from within. And that goes like at every level. I would say like the other thing too is like, get really, really good at your one-on-ones and try your best to do as many skip level one-on-ones as possible. You know, to the point in this podcast, we've talked a lot about like data and measuring things. And that's great. You know, there's a lot of like, you know, data that is ones and zeros, and you can add it up and come to an assumption. But I always think of that as like the skeleton. What you need is you also need the stories to go with that data. And you also are not always sure from the data that's presented to you actually what is happening or how to even think about it. And so you have to think a lot about building like that secondary data set. If you have your quantitative data set in the metrics, you also have to build a really great qualitative data set. And that's going to come out of one-on-ones. Talk to your best reps, understand what's working, understand how they like that new feature, what the sentiment of their customers look like. Also, like, listen to as many calls, attend as many meetings as you can, build that data set. I think that served me really well, because again, like, when I was in that Monday management meeting and you're with, you know, all of your C-level peers, you want to be able to say, the number was this, and here, let me tell you what's going on behind this new feature that we just launched. The reception is fantastic. Here are three customers that really loved it. Boom, quotes. Rinse and repeat that, you know, offer praise. And then also it'll allow you to build the credibility when you're in that same meeting to say, hey, look, like, that this last you know, update was a flop. Our support tickets climbed 25%. And anecdotally, here's what we heard from customers. So build that qualitative data set so that you can just like support and add strength and maybe add like a little bit of flesh to the quantitative numbers that you also have access to.
Yeah, it's all about storytelling, right? We tell stories to our customers in IC roles. You're talking about doing things that don't scale, listening to customer calls, interacting with your CSMs that are on the front line and telling those stories internally, which just make those numbers seem that much more valuable and impactful.
Yep, 100%.
Awesome. We're coming towards the end of our time here. The last question I have for you is, you've been an operator, super successful operator. You've now moved into an investment role. You've started your own fund. I'm sure you have a great bird's eye view these days of across the industry of how different companies are implementing and handling their CS functions. What are some of the trends that you're seeing? And also, what are some of the things that you've seen that have maybe surprised you in this role?
Well, it goes without saying, like the biggest trend right now is obviously AI. I think that's super exciting. You know, there's clearly like, you know, processes, call it process things, regulatory things that need to get worked out here. But I have no doubt that it's coming and there'll be a positive impact overall to people who are in software businesses. And so I think, you know, one of the trends that I see right now that's playing out is one of the first places in organizations that's going to see the benefit of AI is customer success and support and teams, you know, who are interacting with customers. So very, very excited about that. I think when we give CSMs capacity to better support their customers, we're going to lead to better outcomes for our customers. And you're also going to see actually probably some margins in businesses be reduced. So I think that's super exciting. How do I think that's going to play out? I think that's where things get really exciting because SaaS as a general thing has always had fantastic margins. And there's an opportunity now for those margins in SaaS to get even better and even let's say even bigger. And so what I think is going to happen is you're going to actually see software flowing into more and more spaces as the margins improve. That's going to let you to build software for more niche industries, for smaller pools of people, which is going to also make that software just more designed for their specific needs. So I think you're going to see like a proliferation of vertical SaaS. So vertical SaaS meaning, you know, a point solution for a specific industry within the ability to expand out and provide many, many different solutions through that initial launch point. And so super excited about, all of the places that we'll see AI just facilitate the opportunity for A, better customer experiences, and B, better software in a variety of places or more places than we've seen to date. So I couldn't be more excited. Obviously, I'm super biased because I worked for a company that really impacted, let's call it the physical economy, people doing stuff in the real world. At Motive, we brought, you know, 1 in 4 trucks in America online for the first time. So very biased in that. I think the lives of those people in the real world is going to get better. And then obviously very biased because I think the people who impact the lives of those people, the customer facing people, deserve great software. And I think there's more that's possible here. So that's how I see the future playing out. I'm very excited overall and let's get at it. Can't wait.
That's a great note to end on. I'm sure this time next year, there'll be so much more that has happened in AI and customer facing teams will be at the forefront of it. So I'm sure we'll be looking at a very, very different world that hopefully has a positive impact on the outcomes of customers. Well, this has been great, John. Thank you so much again for joining us. You've shared a lot of great wisdom with us today that I'm sure our listeners will get a lot out of. Good luck with everything that you're doing with Success VP, and we'll look forward to tracking your progress on that front.
Same here. Look forward to tracking your progress. You're in for a great ride ahead.